Recapping the weekend in sports and previewing the week ahead. This is FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night with Dalton Arwig and Corey LaBounty.
Bob, you'll get a real sense of the hatred that makes football so great.
I've got the fever, gambling fever.
What we're dealing with here is a complete lack of respect for the law.
You're listening to Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome in, Sports Night, FM Talk 106.5. Hold on. Corey, I think we need to play something that fits tonight a little bit better. Canada decided to open the show tonight with O Canada because of the game that will immediately follow Sports Night. The Toronto Raptors with the chance to win the first NBA championship in Toronto Raptors history. And I think the way that wars work, that if they win tonight, they beat America's team, even though not all of America are behind the Golden State Warriors, that becomes our national anthem. That's actually how that works, Corey. So we'll all be singing O Canada this time tomorrow. And, you know, I thought I would open the show with that tonight. But that was before what happened earlier, and somebody told me that I should have actually started the show with this today. So, of course, we were going to have a lot of College World Series talk tonight, and lots of NBA Finals talk tonight. But after what the Auburn Tigers did earlier today to those North Carolina Tar Heels... Didn't even wait for the second inning. First half inning, batting at the top of the first inning, the Auburn Tigers put up 13 runs in one half of the very first inning and end up winning 14-7, punching their ticket for the fourth time in program history to the College World Series. Now the Auburn Tigers will match up with the Mississippi State Bulldogs this Sunday, first time since 1997 that the Auburn Tigers are playing in the College World Series. And what a night for them to have a game like this, because tonight on Sports Night, right here on FM Talk 106.5, we're talking with former Auburn head football coach and current 2020 Senate candidate Tommy Tuberville, who'll be joining us here on Sports Night in about 5 minutes. But Corey, I don't know if you were able to check out much of that game from earlier today. I know most of the American world, most of the people here in Alabama were at work earlier today I think that game began at 10:30.
It was very early.
Actually, it began at noon, because I know I looked at the clock at 1 o'clock, and that's when North Carolina was heading to the plate for the very first time. So it took about an hour for Auburn to bat through almost twice. They get through 17 batters in that first inning. Judd Ward hits a 3-run home run. Everybody's hitting from the plate. Everybody's getting walked. And then before you know it, the Auburn Tigers up 13-0 and punching their ticket to Omaha, Nebraska. North Carolina with a bit of a bold move today. They took their closer, who's been he's been great for them all year. I mean, they've found themselves with the number 14 seed in this tournament, facing a team in Auburn that they should have beaten, according to them, and moved into the College World Series. But they start Joey Lancelotti today, and he gave up a lot of runs after he went out there to the mound. And the closer did not get it done as a starter. Used four separate pitchers, the Tar Heels did, in that first inning, and the Tigers had sent 17 to the plate, almost batted around twice. You had that big 3-run homer from Judd Ward. They kind of hold on the rest of the game. The Tigers did add one more run late in the game, a couple home runs from North Carolina with a few guys on base, and they end up making the score at least somewhat respectable, 14-7. But the Auburn Tigers moving on after a great Game 3 win in the Super Regionals today.
You have a great Game 3 win, but you combine that with them being able to score the amount of runs that they did in Game 1, which is they were down and scored like maybe 9 runs in 2 innings in the last 2 innings to go ahead and prevail to get that game 1 win. That was very impressive, Dalton. But with the final score being 14-7 today, was that a preview of the 2020 football game that's going to be played between Auburn and North Carolina? Because that is unbelievable that you can score that amount of runs in the first inning.
You know, I had no idea, or at least I had forgotten that these two teams are scheduled to play football. And if you would have told North Carolina fans before this year, okay, your team is going to face the Auburn basketball team in basketball, your team's going to face the Auburn baseball team in the College World Series, and your football team is going to play Auburn in 2020, which of those do you feel like you have the best chance at winning, and which of those do you feel like you have no shot in the universe? They would say, okay, well, we'll start with the football game. We're not going to win that one. Basketball is easy. North Carolina will wipe the floor with Auburn. And baseball, I mean, who is Auburn? They almost made it last year, barely lost to Florida in the Super Regionals. You remember that game 3 last year?
Yes, especially.
Against Florida, and a home run off of the glove of the Auburn, I think, right fielder last year sent them home for the year, sent Florida on to the College World Series. Yeah, North Carolina would have taken that bet any day of the week. But now I don't think they want to see a Eagle. They don't want to see a Tiger. They don't want to see any of that anywhere around the North Carolina facilities after what Auburn has done to them the last few months. And, of course, at the forefront of everybody's mind today, especially Auburn fans, Rod and Paula Bramlett, and Burcham, who was on the call, Andy Burcham, for the Auburn Tigers. If you listen back to that final call today, he actually dedicated that final call to Rod and Paula Bramlett. And remember, this just 2 weeks ago, just over 2 weeks ago, that Rod and Paula Bramlett lost their lives in a car crash, just an awful, awful accident there in Auburn following the SEC tournament. And since then, I think the Auburn Tigers baseball team has only lost one game, and that was that game 2 yesterday to North Carolina where they lost 2-0. But they swept the regionals. They beat Georgia Tech twice. And talk about cardiac kids. They had one of those huge comebacks against Georgia Tech in that first game about a week and a half ago. You mentioned the big comeback in game 1 on Friday, or on Saturday against North Carolina, but today they did not need any of that comeback. They just had to hold on after putting up 13 runs in the first inning. So with that, and after the Arkansas-Ole Miss game that followed, which I thought that 14 runs from Auburn would be the most runs scored today, not so. Arkansas ends up putting up 14 runs and beating Ole Miss. So now we have the College World Series 8 officially set, and they'll get ready to head to Omaha for later this week. And 4 SEC teams making it into the Final 8. So in football, you get 2 of the 4 playoff teams from the SEC with Alabama and Georgia most years. And now in the College World Series final, 4 SEC teams with Vanderbilt the first to move on. And how about the night for that pitcher at Vanderbilt yesterday? On Saturday. Yeah, Kumar Rocker, 131 pitches he threw, struck out 19 batters through the entire game, 19 strikeouts. What a performance from him. So the Vanderbilt Commodores, they are now the highest-seeded team left in the tournament after Michigan upset UCLA. UCLA was the number 1 seed going in, and they lose to Michigan in the Super Regionals. So Vanderbilt now with the number 2 seed, the highest remaining seed in the tournament. You also had Mississippi State move on. Tanner Allen, I know he had one hit on Saturday, but Mississippi State ended up sweeping their opponent to move into the College World Series. They will face Auburn, and from what I understand, I think that series, their first game there is going to begin on Sunday. So Auburn's going to take on Mississippi State in Omaha on Sunday. And the other two SEC teams moved on. Arkansas, I mentioned earlier, whooped up on Ole Miss earlier today. And then the other team here, so Auburn, Mississippi State, Vanderbilt, and Arkansas. Then you've got Michigan, who upset UCLA. Texas Tech, the 8 seed, they'll face Michigan. Florida State moved on in the last year of their coach, Mark Martin.
They upset LSU.
So he's retiring. They're trying to win one for their coach. And you also had Louisville, who moved on. I think they beat Stanford, if I remember correctly. And they would be playing Vanderbilt. So Auburn in the College World Series, will follow them for the rest of this week. Hopefully next week we'll have somebody from Omaha on the show with us to talk about Auburn in the College World Series. But we've already talked about Auburn so much in this first segment. When we come back, we're going to talk with former Auburn football head coach Tommy Tuberville. He's running for Senate here in Alabama. It's the United States Senate. He's running for that 2020 seat. When we come back, we'll talk with him about his campaign for Senate, but also get some football questions in there too. This is Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5 with Dalton Orwig, Corey LeBounty. Coming back with Tommy Tuberville.
You're listening to FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night with Dalton Erwig and Corey LaBounty. Call the show or text your thoughts to 251-343-0106.
Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night. Dalton Erwig and Corey LaBounty here with you on a, I guess we can call it a War Eagle Monday.
That's right.
With how the Auburn baseball team fared earlier. And now, awesome. So cool to be joined by former Auburn football head coach Tommy Tuberville, now a candidate in the Republican primary running for the U.S. Senate seat that's up for grabs in 2020. Longtime football coach announced his campaign back in April, and I'm sure he's been making his way around the state since. Thank you so much for joining us tonight, Coach.
It's great. Good talking to you guys. It's a beautiful night here in Auburn. This is one of the first nights I've been home in probably 3 or 4 weeks, the simple fact I've been on the road. But it's been a lot of fun, and you know, I didn't get a chance to watch the baseball game today. But, man, 13 runs in one inning, hard to beat when you do that.
Yeah, a great showing from the Auburn baseball team today, and I know it's at the front of a lot of people's mind, but Rod Bramlett, who's normally on hand to call those games and lost his life just over 2 weeks ago now, his wife Paula Bramlett in that same vehicle with him. And Coach, I know you, you've probably spent a lot of time with Rod Bramlett in your years with Auburn. What do you think this win for him today would mean to Rod?
Oh, it would have been unbelievable. You know, Rod was... You know, in 2003, I was doing a football banquet, and Jim Fife, who was the voice of the Auburn Tigers at the time, introduced me. He was the MC, and Jim got in his car, and I got in my car afterwards, and he took off home. I took off home. He died that night of a heart attack, and so a few weeks to follow, they named Rod the new voice of the Auburn Tigers. And you know, Rod was a little bit of an introvert. You know, he didn't talk a whole lot. He's kind of quiet, and I tell you, I was a little skeptical, but he did one outstanding job, and it's just unbelievable. You know, he and his wife lost their life in just a matter of seconds, and it just goes to show you never know. Count your blessings and enjoy every day and every second.
Yeah, that's right. And Rod was nice enough to join Corey and I here on Sports Night during Auburn's great run during the basketball season. He's just so fired up for that university. You can tell that he bleeds orange and blue, or he bled orange and blue for the Auburn Tigers. Well, we want to talk sports with you tonight, Coach, but before we get to that, I know you've been hitting the campaign trail hot and heavy since you announced your campaign for the U.S. Senate seat back in April. What was it that made you decide to run for a seat in the U.S. Senate?
Well, you know, I went out and started talking to people. I thought I'd get in politics. I retired at a young age and moved back to Alabama and thought about running for governor. And Kay Ivey went in, and I said, no, I'm not going to do that. And you know, we had an opening in a special election, and Doug Jones got elected. And I just feel like that the people of this state want somebody, a better voice in Washington. And I love politics. I love this country, and I'm a patriot, and I want to do all I can for this country and this state. And I'm running now, and I'm running hard, and I got a great opportunity. A lot of people, most people, want an outsider. They're tired of politicians. I know I am. So it's fun. You know, it's a lot like coaching. You go out and recruiting and raise money and meet a lot of people, and I've done that all over the state and all over the South and really all over the country for the last 40 years. So a lot of fun.
Well, you know, they say name recognition means a whole lot in politics, and that's something that you certainly have a ton of, especially here in Alabama, name recognition. What's it been like trying to get past the football talk on the campaign trail when you go out and meet people? I know I'm sure you're happy to talk football and sports like you're doing with us tonight, but how do you kind of turn that corner and say, listen, great, I was the Auburn football coach, I love football, but let's talk a little bit about what I can do in the U.S. Senate here from Alabama.
Well, unfortunately, it opens up a lot of doors, as you well know. This state's football crazy, and we've got a lot of great teams in this state, and I've just been a part of it. And again, it gets me in the door. We talk a little bit of football, and then we start talking politics because, you know, we're in trouble in this country. You know, we're having tough times. Fortunately, we got Donald Trump elected, and we need to continue to push for him, and he's doing a lot of great things. But it's just people are tired of the everyday politics, and people tell me, Coach, we're tired of the revolving doors of politicians getting reelected and going back to Washington, and it's the same old, nothing gets done. And so let's try something else. Let's try some people that are not politicians, that are used to winning and pulling teams together and getting things done.
Coach, you look at the coaching strategies that go into being the head coach of a Power 5 university like Ole Miss or Auburn University. You look at what are some of the strategies as coach that may help you as a senator. You kind of touched on it briefly there. But more importantly, once you go out and you establish what you're all about and what your stance is going to be on certain topics or situations, how are you going to get the Alabama fans to vote for you, Coach?
Well, first of all, it's all about communication in anything that you do, in business, in politics, in family, in coaching. It's all about communication. Can you communicate with the people that you're working with? And, you know, I talked to a lot of senators before I did this, and people that I've known for a while, and they said, it's coaching. It's nothing but coaching. You'd be perfect. It's about getting along with people and pulling people together and to win. But, you know, a lot of people have asked me that, Coach, you know, you got Alabama fans and you got Auburn fans. And as I tell people, this is not a game here. You know, we've got a great game, the Iron Bowl. We've got a lot of great teams in this state. But this is about life. This is very serious business we're talking about. And it's not a norm. I mean, we're at a crossroads in this country of deciding which direction we want to go in. And there's a lot of people want to pull us in a direction that the people of Alabama don't want to go. And so that's the reason I want to go help. And again, you know, the humor I put into it is, you know, if it wasn't for me, Alabama wouldn't have Nick Saban. So that's the reason a lot of people should vote for me. But on the other hand, you know, I've been around a lot of Alabama people. I've got a lot of Alabama friends. As many Alabama friends, I've got Auburn friends, because people love football. And again, I've traveled the state. I love to be around people. I love athletics. I love people. I really love the kids that I coached. And again, it's just a fun time for me to stress what I've learned in coaching and leadership to take it to the political world. And I mean, it's a perfect fit. The more and more I talk and think about it and people come up and ask questions, it's a great opportunity to communicate and try to help our country. My goodness, we're in trouble, and I want to help as much as I can.
When you look at the political career of Tommy Osborne, the most successful coach in the history of Nebraska football, how much influence did he have on you and where you have decided to go into politics and the success that he had in running for political office?
Yeah, really did. And I've talked to Coach Osborne several times. He ran for Congress and won. And then, you know, the one thing he told me, he says, Coach, the thing about politics, you're used to things happening quick. In politics, they happen real slow. The main thing is you got to have patience, but you stick to your morals and values and do it the right way. And don't let people change you for any reason other than what your values take you. And, you know, he gave me some great advice. And he said it was very, very fulfilling for him to be able to do things for his country. And I want to do the same thing.
We're talking with former Auburn head football coach and now 2020 Senate candidate Tommy Tuberville here on Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5. Now, Coach, I know the primary election is in March of next year. Is that correct? Yeah, March is the primary voting?
Right. First week in March. It's a marathon. It's not a sprint. So it's pretty good ways away. But, you know, that's fine with me. I enjoy the work.
I can imagine, especially all the work you have to put in as a football coach day in and day out, but that day will be here before we know it. And we know with the special election just a couple years ago that an underdog kind of came out of nowhere first in the primaries with Roy Moore, and then we saw how the actual election took place with Doug Jones then upsetting Roy Moore to win the Senate seat. But between now and that primary election in March of next year, how do you kind of strike that balance of letting everybody know, hey, I can be a better senator for the United States and for Alabama than Doug Jones is right now, but you're also competing against a lot of other Republicans in the primary. So you talked about morals and values. How do you kind of strike that tone that I'm the Republican that deserves that spot without kind of going overboard and into attack mode?
Well, you know, the attack mode is right. You know, they obviously, I'm already have started people coming after me for certain reasons. And you know, the one thing that I always believed in is you coach your own team. You can't control anybody else. So that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to coach my team, myself, and run the way I want to run. People are going to say things about you, make things up, bring stuff out that you've probably never heard of, because unfortunately in our business, it gets a little bit ugly, and people try to do anything they possibly can to win, but I'm going to sell myself, and I'm not going to worry about anybody else. I've always done that. I was able to do that coaching my football teams is, you know, worry about what we can control. Don't worry about what we can't. And, you know, I know what I want to do. I know what things I want to bring to the table in terms of the helping this state and this country, of being a senator, about communication, about doing the things the right way, the moral way, the Christian way. And so I'm looking forward to it. It's just a marathon that you got to worry about yourself and try not to cross over and get into that he said, I said stuff. Mm-hmm. Do your own thing. Do it the right way. Believe in what you're doing and have confidence in yourself. I don't know enough about these other people saying anything about them. I really don't. I just know what I know, and I'm going to talk about myself and what I want to do and how I want to help the people of Alabama and this country.
Coach, you've just been a winner as a head coach everywhere you've been, whether it was Ole Miss from 95 to 98, Auburn from 99 to 08, Texas Tech from 10 to 12, Cincinnati from 13 to 16. Just a winning record everywhere, Coach. Did you see that winning record? You said this is more about, not about football, it's about the game of life and what's at stake. But again, having that winning mentality, does that kind of carry over into politics and what you're trying to achieve as a leader?
Exactly. You got to know how to win, first of all. I mean, you got to know how to do things in terms of making things positive for what you want to do. You got to have an agenda. You can't just grab bag things and just say, you know, this or that. You've got to believe in something. And first of all, I believe in this state and this country. I mean, there's no better place. I've been a coach. I was fortunate. I was able to travel the country and all over this world, that we had great world we have in terms of talking to our troops and the people that protect our country. And it's just, it brings tears to my eyes. You know, last Thursday, my dad, at age 18, 75 years ago, on D-Day, he landed at Omaha Beach in Normandy and driving a tank. I can't imagine that, being 18 years old and being in that situation where so many people died in harm's way. Seeing all your friends, a lot of your friends, go through very tough times, it just brings tears to your eyes of the people that men and women have sacrificed for the freedoms that we have. So this is not a hard job. This is a job I want to do for people that have done many, many great things for this country.
Well said, Coach. I think a lot of people lose sight of that. And when you're able to kind of empathize and think about what if you were in the shoes of so many Americans and so many other allied forces that were fighting that World War II 75 years ago, just a beautiful statement you had there. But we did want to talk a little bit of football with you while we have you on tonight. And you mentioned earlier some of the kids you've coached. I mean, it's been a long, storied career for you as a head coach. But back when you were coaching Ole Miss, you coached this big offensive lineman, Terrence Metcalf, who just so happens to have a kid drafted into the NFL this year, playing for the Seattle Seahawks, DK Metcalf, who might have as much muscle as his dad, except he's not an offensive lineman, he's a receiver. So I know this is kind of an out of left field question for you to start with the football talk, but you did such a good job as an analyst. How do you feel about DK's chances with all that muscle? And I know it takes a long time to turn a battleship around, is what they say when you have a body like DK Metcalf, but how do you think his NFL career will look from this point forward? Can you be that big and be a good NFL wide receiver?
Oh yeah, look at Calvin Johnson a few years ago, you know, for the Detroit Lions, you know, from Georgia Tech, I think that was his name, a big wide receiver. A couple of years ago, I was working for ESPN doing games, and I did an A&M Ole Miss game in Oxford. I went down on the field pregame, walked around with Terrence, and he kind of pointed out his son. He's huge. He is huge. And man, the kid's got huge hands. He is a prototype receiver. He's exactly what you're looking for because the target is so big. His wingspan, the one thing that's probably going to get him a little bit is his quickness. Quickness mm-hmm. usually wins in football. Now, he's got excellent straight-ahead speed, but the quickness of getting away on the line of scrimmage. I can remember Michael Irvin telling me this. I was on the staff. We coached Michael Irvin back in the 80s with Miami, who maybe one of the best receivers ever. I asked him, Mike, what was the toughest thing about you in the NFL from college? He said, Coach, getting off the line of scrimmage when you're big and tall like I was, those little cornerbacks get on you like fleas.
Hmm.
And you, if you can't get away from them that first 2 or 3 yards, the quarterback's going to take his eyes off you and go to somebody else. He doesn't have enough time to focus that long to wait on you to get open. So he said, I had to learn to get open. Well, Terrence Metcalf's going to have the same thing. They're going to put him in motion a lot,
mm-hmm.
get him off the line of scrimmage until he learns how to do it. But he is the perfect specimen for an outside receiver, not an inside. He's got to play outside receiver, running verticals, running deep routes, but he's got to be able to beat those corners off the line of scrimmage.
Coach Tuberville, you talked about your time in coaching and the success that you had as a head coach, but as an assistant coach, your time at Miami, the time when the U was just infamous in college football, and it was a historic program to where there was none other that can compete with Miami. You had an opportunity to not only be the assistant coach, but the defensive coordinator as well. The Catholic versus Convicts game. Kind of tell me about what you remember about playing Notre Dame in that situation.
Well, first of all, you know, the back in those days, you know what? I coached 55 games as an assistant and never lost in the old Orange Bowl, 55-0 while I was there. It kind of reminds me of what we're seeing now with the University of Alabama, how they're pretty much dominating year in and year out college football. Well, we were doing the same thing at Miami back in the 80s and early 90s, and it was fun to watch. It was fun to be a part of it. Now, that being said, we were a little bit, our guys were a little bit rambunctious, so to speak. They would stress the fact that they scored a touchdown. I guess they kind of started the dancing and the profiling as an individual player. Now, Catholics versus Convicts was a situation where in 1985, Jimmy Johnson beat Notre Dame at the end of the season very badly. I mean, it was like 50 points. And Jerry Faust was the coach. He was fired. Lou Holtz was brought in. We don't play them again for 2 or 3 years. And that, I guess it was 3 years. And so they were laying waiting on us because of that game. And, of course, Lou Holtz had a great football team. We had a great team. We were ranked one. They were ranked two. We played there in about midseason. And instead of tying the game, Jimmy wanted to go for the win at the end. We lost the game. But, you know, we had a fight in the tunnel before the game. Fans were coming out of the stands. It was very, very, very ugly. But this being said, there was not one 15-yard penalty. It was one of the most well-played games that I'd ever been in as a Miami Hurricane coach. It was just perfectly played. Everybody played hard. They beat us in the end. But it was a huge, huge game. I still got one of those Catholic versus Convicts T-shirts.
That's awesome. You know, there were a lot of, I guess, quote-unquote bad men on those Miami rosters back then, guys that you wouldn't want to see on the other side from you in an Oklahoma drill or bull in the ring. Who would you say, in all of your years of coaching, who's the baddest man you've coached? You put them up one-on-one against anybody else, nobody's taking them down.
Well, probably won't remember. You guys probably won't. Probably one guy was Jerome Brown. He was actually playing that first season, defensive lineman, first pick by the Philadelphia Eagles. Got killed in a car wreck. Probably the best player and one of the toughest, hard-nosed kids that played. And you never thought it because he was a clown on the field, was Warren Sapp. Mm. Warren Sapp was a man. And he may be the best defensive lineman I've seen. I had Russell Maryland, Warren Sapp, Jerome Brown, Dwayne Johnson, The Rock. He played for us. But I tell you, that Warren Sapp was one human being that could flat run, and he was mean and tough. And, you know, there's been a lot of great ones all over the country, but just the ones I've been around, you know, those four or five defensive linemen are very, very good.
When you start talking about memorable players, you've coached so many. Talk to us about your most memorable moment as a head coach, and it can be on the field, it can be off the field, it could be even as an assistant coach as well, because there's so many memories to choose from. But if you had to pick that one that just stands out and you would like to talk about, what would that moment be?
I would probably, of course, there's a lot of great moments being a head coach, and it, you know, it's more about the players than the coach, but I just really enjoyed the efforts of all the kids that I coached over the years, and just made it so fun for me as a head coach. But I really enjoyed, at the end of the day, beating Steve Spurrier. And he and I are good friends. and he come rolling into Auburn 1 year, ranked number one team in the country, and man, they had a good football team, and we were like 17, 18 point underdog, and we, for some reason, Steve kept throwing the ball during the game. We couldn't stop the run, but he was going to try to score a lot of points, throwing the ball down the field, and we ended up picking off one or two and staying in the game, and somehow, some way, we managed to have about a 40-yard field goal with the wind blowing at the end to have a chance to win, and Damon Duval kicked that thing in there, and it just, I mean, to beat a number one team in the country and to be one of your very good coaching buddies and Steve Spurrier when they were number one, there's not a better feeling to know that a couple of years earlier than that, he put about 40, 45 on me. To be able to beat him in a situation like that was kind of, you don't want to call it revenge, but you know personally at the end of the day, it's going to be bragging rights for a long time.
That is some good stuff. Now, Coach, the political world and the sports world don't intertwine very often. There are some moments like the steroid era in baseball. I'm thinking of the national anthem, Colin Kaepernick situation between he and the president just a few years ago. But this concussions and CTE in football, that seems to be one of those topics where no one is forbidden from giving an answer on it. They're asked about it in congressional hearings, for goodness sakes. But we've seen a shift in the game of football over the last few years as they kind of try to make the game a bit safer because of discoveries surrounding CTE and concussions. What, in your opinion, do you think the future of football will look like? What do you think it'll look like in the next decade or so?
Yeah, just a few years ago, well, I was on for 14 years, Grant Taft's Board of Trustees, which basically regulated and oversaw the 12, 15,000 coaches we have in this country. It's kind of like our union. It's one time we all get together during the year and we talk rules, we talk things that we want to make football better. Football is in trouble a little bit. And as being president, what, 3 or 4 years ago, my last year on the board, I had to go to many, many safety meetings, concussion meetings. And the thing that we have to understand, first of all, we know it's a contact sport. There's more concussions in some of the other sports than there are football. But football is a noticeably contact sport, and so we strive to make it better and better. I don't know if we can make the helmet much better. I tell you, they've really worked hard and to put things together to make it safer for kids. We've taken away practice time. We've taken away the contact, the amount of contact you can have in practice. But at the end of the day, you're going to have contact. You're going to have collisions. So it is a great sport. It's a sport that teaches so many good things. The upside is so much more than the downside of just people getting hurt. And again, you're going to have injuries. You are going to have injuries, but you're going to have injuries in anything that you do. And I think that we just need to keep trying to teach the coaches how to coach blocking and tackling. I think that at the end of the day, the technique and the fundamentals is what we've got to continue to teach to make it safer. It's not going to be safer by slowing players down or cutting back on practice time or shortening the games. At the end of the day, it's about teaching players one thing is do not use your head to block and tackle. Use your shoulder. It's so easy with the helmets nowadays to use that as a ramming rod. But coaches, and they are starting to understand it and teaching better, is to keep the head out of football. You can play football, it can be fun, exciting, even if you keep the head out. So sometimes it's unavoidable, but most of the time it is. And so it's all about teaching that safety and blocking and tackling.
Another issue in college football that's gaining more and more steam every year, and especially this offseason we saw it, the college transfer market, that transfer portal that we seem to hear about every day now. Much different look now than even 2 or 3 years ago. With the leniency we've seen lately with Justin Fields and Tate Martell, that the NCAA has shown kind of leniency in there and allowing them to play immediately, what's your take on all these highly recruited players we now see leaving after 1 or 2 years with the school they signed with?
Well, I'm mixed on it. You know, I'm for players being able to play and be able to get on the field in a situation that helps them become a better person, a better football player, and all that. Now, that being said, you know, we're starting to teach these kids to quit, if you know what I'm saying. Sometimes you've got to make a commitment for a certain amount of time, and I still believe that. Now, I don't say that players have to stay the entire time. If you do transfer, there's got to be some kind of penalty, because if we go to this portal of just letting everybody start to transfer, you're going to see the haves start to really stack up. Because say, for instance, you have a player that you recruit, and he goes to Troy University.
Mm-hmm.
And not to say that Troy's not a great school. It is a great school, and they've done a great job. But that being said, the kid develops. After a year, he's much better than what everybody thought. He's a great football player. And they start making these rules where these kids can transfer.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to see that. I still think there should be a situation where if you do transfer before your third year, you have got to pay a penalty for that. You can't just transfer and immediately be able to play. Now, there's some situations I think that the NCAA can say, okay, we'll let them go ahead and transfer and play, but not just everybody. If you do that, you're going to tear the inner workings of college football and amateur sports away from it. Now, I really like the graduation rule. Once you've graduated, you can go wherever you want and play.
Mm-hmm.
and be able to get on the field. I understand that, but for kids to go in and start transferring after the first year, unless it's a special circumstance, there's got to be a penalty. Now, the NCAA, they're in trouble. I mean, they've made billions of dollars off these players over the years and not giving anything back. And right now, they're very vulnerable of giving anything they can to keep them getting sued. But it's just a tough situation when kids go in and they stay a year and they say, you know, I don't like it here. The coach hollers at me too much, too disciplined. But I think there's some circumstances where you can give them a transfer, but just don't let them line up and say, okay, I'm out of here. I don't like this. I'm not the starter. You got to figure that out before you go, how long it's going to take to get you on the field.
Coach, you're talking about getting on the field. You've had an overall successful record as a head coach of 159-99. Your coaching tree is very impressive. Neil Brown, Gene Chizik, Tyson Helton, Will Muschamp, Bobby Petrino, Paul Rhodes, Zach Taylor, all either head coaches in the collegiate ranks or the NFL ranks. Talk about your coaching tree and what it means to see success for those who were under your tutelage.
Yeah, I tell you, it's like a family. Because you work so closely together, people don't realize as a coaching staff how many hours you're around each other. You're like brothers, and so you get very close. I talk to coaches and players all the time that I've worked with over the years. I'm very proud of all of them. There's a lot of young guys moving up at Auburn. You got several players, Cadillac Williams. I'm just so excited for Carnell going to Auburn and being a running back coach. I think the future is the limit for him. There's no limit for him. I think he's really going to do well. But Zach Taylor this year, just a couple of years ago, he's a young guy. And all of a sudden, you know, he's a couple of years later, he's the head coach at Cincinnati Bengals. And, you know, it's just putting yourself in the right spot, but also your work ethic. People don't understand. Somebody asked me about going in the Senate, about work ethic. I told him, I said, you don't have a clue what I've done for 40 years. I enjoy working. You can't do what I've done or any of these coaches do and not be a success and not have great work ethic. And just, it's fun. It really teaches you a lot of things. But, again, I'm just glad to be and proud to be a part of some of these guys' lives. And, I enjoy talking to them about their success and even their failures. And everybody has ups and downs in any business, and coaching is certainly one of those.
The 2004 Auburn undefeated team that you had is about perseverance and work ethic and finding a way when you get shut out to just keep grinding and keep finding a way that team did in 2004. But, Coach, looking back on your coaching career or just your career in general, is there anything that you would do differently if you could look back and tell yourself 25 to 30 years ago, coming out as a high school coach, assistant coach, is there anything that you would change along the way in the things that you did about your daily life?
Well, it's hard to look back and change. You know, I've always taught myself, you know, don't look in the rearview mirror. I think that's a good point that anybody can take. I learned that from Jimmy Johnson. When you make a decision, you go and don't look back. And we always taught our players to do that. You know, just make a decision on the field and don't, hey, even if it wasn't right, then, you know, get by it and keep going. I think that's a great lesson in life. But you know, that there's probably a couple of situations in coaching that sometimes, as a younger coach, when I was assistant, I thought the grass was greener on the other side, and it really never is. Mm-hmm. It really is not. You know, if you're in a good place, you know, stick as long as you can, make it work. But you know, it's about people. You know, coaching is very, very much about people and getting to know people and learning things from people. You know, the one thing that I've learned, and I think even my wife says this, my wife, she didn't compliment me on a lot of things sometimes because we're real close. But she says, you know, you're a great listener. You love to listen. And I learned that from some of my younger coaches, younger days in coaching as an assistant. It's just, hey, absorb all you can. Just listen and absorb all you can. People that want to talk a lot, you know, they're not learning. You're learning if you're listening. And so I think that's a great point for anybody. Just listen and absorb all you can. But again, don't look back. Look forward. Make a decision. But don't be afraid to make a decision. I think that's important in life.
Wise words. Wise words. Coach Tommy Tuberville, thank you so much. Thank you for joining us tonight on Sports Night. Good luck on the rest of your campaign. Hoping to hear from you, I guess, later this week here on FM Talk 106.5. We'll let Sean Sullivan ask you some real political questions. Corey and I put on our politics hats and tried to get it done tonight, but he's the man when it comes to Senate interviews. So thank you for joining us tonight. And if somebody wants to find out more about your campaign, where can they reach you online?
Very simple, TommyForSenate.com. I got a great website, putting up a lot of pictures about the past and coaching and players, and it's kind of, for me, it's kind of a museum I'm putting together for people to kind of look and see what I've done that really might not have followed football, but that are voters that will pick this U.S. Senator down the way. So TommyForSenate.com.
All right, we'll send people that way. And I don't know if you're allowed to say it anymore now that you're supposed to represent Alabama fans and Auburn fans if you are elected senator, but can we get a War Eagle for the 14 spot that the baseball team put up earlier today?
You got it. That was a great day for Auburn and baseball, so War Eagle to the baseball team.
All right, thank you, Coach. Have a good one.
All right, thank you.
That's Tommy Tuberville. What a great interview there. Head coach Tommy Tuberville, former Auburn head coach, now running for Senate here in Alabama, the 2020 Senate seat currently held by Doug Jones. And we're trying to get him on later this week for Midday Mobile. I know Sean's got a bunch of questions for him on Midday Mobile, but great to talk some football with a former Auburn coach.
Without question, Dalton, I mean, you just look at his early career, his roots being from Arkansas, being an assistant and head coach in the high school ranks, and then just paying his dues, going to Arkansas State and then Miami, and making his way through the Power Five ranks. And you just like to listen to what he has to say, because he has plenty of wisdom that he brings, and he's been in some tough battles as far as coaching is concerned, and played the best. Like you said, he played the number one team in the country, Florida, and had an opportunity to beat Steve Spurrier, which was his biggest accomplishment that he felt that he had. And it's just a wonderful opportunity to hear him talk about his push for U.S. Senate. Look forward to hearing Sean, like you said, just ask him some great and dig into detail about where his aspirations and what his ideals are. But Tommy Tuberville, he's a coaching legend.
Yeah, and if you missed any of that interview, don't worry. We will load it to our podcast here after the show. That'll be on FMTalk1065.com momentarily. It's been a War Eagle hour with the 14-7 win for the baseball team earlier today, and then Tommy Tuberville just on with us. So coming up on the other side of the break, Corey, we have got to talk about this NBA Finals Game 5 tonight. Who would have guessed that the Toronto Raptors have the Golden State Warriors on the ropes, and Kevin Durant making his long-awaited return to the court. We'll talk about that when we get back. This is Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
Sports talk to start your week. You're listening to FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night.
Hey, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night. Dalton Orwig and Corey Labounty. Thank you, Tommy Tuberville, for coming on the show. What a great interview. Great chance to talk to an all-timer, an all-time head coach running for Senate now in 2020. Hey, I wanted to thank our friends at the American Softball Association. I know they're gearing up for the year to start this week, Corey. They had the draft last Wednesday at Moe's Barbecue. That went well. And now doubleheader this Friday night to start the ASBA season. You got the E1 Pro Ballers taking on the field, and then you got the Performance Lab taking on Mobile USA. Now, I don't know if I'm supposed to have a favorite. Mobile USA is my favorite. I'm championing them this year, maybe because we talked to Stephanie Horvath.
Yes, last week.
A great person who's on Mobile USA. But they get started this Friday. They're at Pat Hicks Softball Field in Satsuma. You'll want to catch that doubleheader. And they're still looking for host families. It's only a six-week-long season. If you have a room and maybe some closet space, put up one of these ASPA pro players. It's 6 weeks long, and you'll get some great if you have a kid who's playing softball, they give you some great mentorship during the six-week-long season. But ASPASoftball.com, you can find out more about tickets and check out the schedule for the games you want to make it to. All right, coming up in looks like about 5 minutes, the Toronto Raptors and Golden State Warriors will prepare to take the court where we will hear, let's see, tonight's game is in Toronto. So the first anthem will be the national anthem, the real anthem. And then after that, they'll get to the O Canada stuff that they sing up there north of the American border, whatever that song is, right? But Toronto with Golden State on the ropes, up 3-1 now. When we talked last week, just 7 days ago, Golden State had evened the series up at 1 after winning a game in Toronto. And since then, Kawhi Leonard has done Kawhi Leonard things. And the Raptors looking at the first championship for the entire country of Canada ever, the first championship in sport since the Toronto Blue Jays won the World Series back in 93. Mm-hmm. Kevin Durant will be on the court tonight, assuming. Actually, we can't even say assuming. The odds are that he's not at full health. But, Corey, even if Kevin Durant is at 100% health and he looks like the great Kevin Durant we all know, do they have a shot at coming back? Do they have a shot at winning three straight games the same way Cleveland won three straight over them after falling into a 3-1 hole?
No, I think they will come back and make history. The bad part about that is Champagne Poppy, a.k.a. Drake,
right,
will have an opportunity to live up to his name tonight if the Raptors are able to clinch and defeat the Golden State Warriors. But Durant coming back is going to make a difference. They're going to run off three in a row, dog.
That is that's a Babe Ruth calling his shot if you get that right, because that would be insane. See, I think Toronto ends it tonight. I think Kawhi Leonard has been the best player on the court. Maybe not for each and every game, but certainly if you take all four of the previous games as a whole, Kawhi Leonard's been the best one out there. We saw DeMarcus Cousins with his incredible game two, Steph Curry with his incredible game three, but it looks like the Warriors are on just seriously tired legs right now. Coming into tonight's game the last few days, Toronto's been the pretty heavy favorite. I know they opened as 2.5-point favorites. That was bet up to 3.5, but with the news that Kevin Durant is playing tonight, that has completely swung the other way. Now the Golden State Warriors are 1.5-point favorites, according to Vegas. You think the Golden State wins tonight? I'm going to go out there and say that Toronto wins, and it's not even close.
Wow.
I don't think Kevin Durant looks like the old Kevin Durant. DeMarcus Cousins still looks injured. Steph Curry looks tired. Klay Thompson still looks injured. This might not be the 100% healthy Warriors that we all expect to see each and every NBA Finals, but I think Toronto has done what they can against the team that's out there on the court with them, and Kawhi Leonard might just be the best basketball player in the entire world right now. I still think LeBron is number one, and Kevin Durant's probably a close number two, but Kawhi Leonard's certainly giving them a run for their money.
Kawhi is giving folks their money's worth. He's just so monotone, you know, just getting the job done for the Raptors, bottom line. And DeMarcus is hurting. Like you said, Durant coming back. I just think that now that everybody's coming back with Durant, Boogie, you're going to get Klay, you're going to get Steph, you're going to get Draymond. I just think that the Warriors are going to find a way, that infusion of energy that they need, Dalton, and it's going to be a great three games. And I'll tell you what, they're going to be on the other side of history this time. They were up 3-1 against LeBron, and they lost that series. Now they're going to be able to flip the script, and they're going to win the world championship.
Now, we're here in the last minute, and coming up next, the car show with Tom Claxton and Kevin Raywinkle. Hope you've got your questions ready for them. But, Corey, here in this last 30 seconds, you're a guy who watches DeMarcus Cousins very, very closely. We know he had that great game, too. Does he look right to you out there? Does he look like he might be injured?
I don't think he's injured, but I just think that he's laboring a little bit. Not necessarily injured. Probably hurt, but not injured. And he's playing through.
All right, we'll see. They'll get ready to tip off here in about 15, 20 minutes. The Auburn Tigers heading to the College World Series. They'll take on Mississippi State on Sunday. So next week, we're going to have a whole lot more Auburn Tigers baseball talk and more going on in the world of sports. That does it for this Monday night's edition of Sports Night here on FM Talk 106.5.